You're listening to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparable's only podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am Scott McNulty, joined across the bridge of the USS Titan by Commander Jason Snell.
Are you over there, Scott? It's very dark. I can't see if you're over on the other side of the
moon
bridge.
Moonlighting.
Lights? Computer? Lights? Anyone?
Illumination, do it. 85%.
Anywhere? Computer. It's very, very dark on the bridge of the USS Titan. I was very confused.
Mood lighting. I don't know. Yes, we are here to discuss Season 3, Episode 1 of Star Trek Picard, titled The Next Generation.
Scott, I think I might understand what this title is referring to.
Oh, it's a subtle reference to Pepsi. It's a tie-in.
Interesting. Yeah. It also, Dr. Crusher has a kid, so.
What?
Double meaning.
Also.
Who's not Wesley. A non-Wesley offspring.
Yes. So this is when I say, if you haven't watched Star Trek Picard Season 3, Episode 1, and you don't want any spoilers, stop listening right now. But yes, so that kid is, one assumes, Jean-Luc Picard and Beverly Crusher's child.
Yeah.
We will find out that perhaps next episode.
Right, we don't get that information from Ed Spaliers, who's the actor playing that. He doesn't say that. I remember him. He was in Outlander. He played a very bad guy in Outlander. But also, he speaks with a British accent, which I find confusing.
It's genetic.
Was it a genetic British accent? I don't know. We'll find out. Could be.
Well, you know, because his father's French, and so...
And speaks with a British accent.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets passed down. Genetically.
It's just the way, on the father's side.
Well,
we'll
find out next week, I'm sure. That'll be one of those big topics for discussion.
I can imagine, because just judging by this episode, which I will say up front, I enjoyed. I know that there's some grumbling out there about it, but I thought it was fun. But it does kind of revel in references. So I imagine they, you know, picked him to play this character, and someone thought it would be fun if he just kept his accent and you never discuss it because, you know, that's what happened with Picard. So
maybe.
I would guess.
Maybe so. It's possible.
Maybe they'll explain it. I don't know.
I like this episode too. There are some choices that it makes that I have some opinions about that I might not. Fortunately, I have a podcast on which to share all my opinions. But I don't think I'm, you know, I'm keeping it even keel. I think one can overreact to them as well. So I'm going to try to keep it on the level.
I think so. And I do think so. When last we met last week, we said that we knew one thing and one thing only, that the first episode would be very good. Now, I'm not sure if it's very good. I think it is good. And there were moments that I enjoyed. But I think it set up us for an interesting ride. So we will see who these mysterious people who keep having different faces and showing up after Beverly Crusher for some reason and her son.
On her little ship that she just basically sets an alarm for the computer saying, wake me if a ship tries to dock. And then she turns up the music and takes a Xanax or something and sacks out on the couch. And
waits for Jean-Luc to show
up. And then the computer says, hey, somebody's docking. It's like, oh, maybe you should have told me sooner about that.
That's true. Yeah. Why not? But she's in a nebula or a something or other.
Something
I don't know
like
what that is.
An anomalous place that is hard to find.
Gaseous thing.
Yeah, exactly. Gaseous anomaly, something like that.
Mm-hmm. And then she locks her son in his room. And,
that's right, without his dinner.
Kills some people.
And she does. She vaporizes some people or something. It's actually commented on later on, right? That it's like, well, this is unusual. Like the ash left behind by the vaporized creatures that were trying to get her.
Who knows? Yeah. What
Beverly is up to, it remains a mystery. In fact, I watched the Ready Room post-game show thing with Will Wheaton, and he had Gates McFadden and Patrick Stewart on. And I find it, I found it very interesting to see how difficult it was for them to say anything about anything because they could only talk about what's in episode one. And the fact is, in terms of what's There's Crusher doing, what's she all about? Can't say a word because it's not in here. It is a mystery. It is left. Just as I think people can go a little overboard with their judgments about episode one, I would also say that people could go a little overboard demanding details that are undoubtedly forthcoming, but not in this episode, because that's not what this episode is trying to do. It's trying to set up a mystery, and then we'll learn more next week.
One assumes, yes. I was watching this, or one of the seven
weeks after that.
That's right.
And then if we still don't know these answers at the end of the season, then we can be mad.
Yes. Or is it just going to be a chain of former crew people of the Enterprise sending mysterious messages to Picard, and he has to stop what he's doing and go visit them?
The final episode is Picard in his chateau with the rest of the cast of The Next Generation in little frozen pods saying, "I've collected them all."
Finally.
The end. And
that
would
be it. That's right. That would be a shocking twist.
It would.
And I'm here for it.
It really would. So just stay tuned for the Picard's Menagerie, in which he collects them all. And then he steps in his own pod and says, "Now we will live forever." And that's the end. Yeah.
Yes, because he claims that he is not interested in a legacy, which I think is rubbish.
It's BS,
He's all about his legacy. I think that, people have strong reactions and strong opinions about these characters and Star Trek in general. So,
absolutely.
They're very passionate. So they want to express their opinions. And we have a podcast to do the exact same thing.
That's
so
right.
we are amongst.
This is our podcast.
That's right. Get your other opinions out of here, people. So it starts, they're packing up the chateau. I can't tell if this is setting the number of references that we're going to get as like kind of standard. We're just going to get like a shotgun to the face of references in every episode, or if they're like, okay, let's just get them all out of the way in this kind of clever way. I don't know.
I think the implication of the scene where they're packing things up at Chateau Picard is that Picard has decided that basically he's going to not live his life as we saw him at the beginning of season one in the chateau, and instead he is going to go with Laris on her assignment. And so they're basically packing up to move and to put the house in mothballs, basically. And I think the implication there is that Picard is thinking maybe he'll never come back. And
he's retiring.
He was already retired there, but he's like re-retiring to be
he's really with, retiring
and to embrace being with Laris and being a more giving partner rather than saying, stay here with me, watching grapes grow or nothing. Instead, he's going to be like, oh, you have to do security on some planet somewhere? Sure, I'll come along and
hang out.
Do whatever
it is I do.
Wear a sun hat. Do my do some painting, whatever.
Play a flute.
Could be.
I feel like the Resican flute is the one thing he would keep because he lived a whole lifetime.
Also very portable.
Yes, it's true.
It's
not that big. I can understand trying to get rid of that giant painting of the Enterprise. That's a pain to move from planet to planet.
Yeah, you got to put that on eBay or Federation F Bay, Enterprise D Bay. How about that?
Exactly. Now, I wonder, can you just transport? Do people just transport their stuff? So you just use a transporter. You don't just beam it up to a ship and then beam it over to Geordi.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you have to like pack it up. Maybe like it's like putting it in a moving truck or something, right? You got
to
put it in boxes and stuff.
Crate it up. And then they beam the crate away.
And then they would beam it. Yeah. I think that's to a ship that would take it someplace and then beam it down and then you'd unpack it. I think that would be the sequence of events. I didn't expect to be discussing the details of space moving with you, but I love it.
It's a thing. I find it fascinating.
I do too.
Because the transporter is one of these in the fine tradition of Star Trek, one of these like technologies that they use because it is cheaper to get them onto the planet, right, in the original series than showing the shuttle. But the implications of it are so mind-boggling and they don't really discuss it at all. So I just think like every aspect of life I feel would be changed by the instantaneous transportation available to basically anyone.
But. So I have a similar thing. This is jumping ahead a little bit, but I have a similar question. I've got some answers for it, right? This is the thing that I think the show doesn't want us to think this deeply about it. But I was also thinking we have to get to a place in the galaxy. Okay, well, you guys are Starfleet officers, right? Because so what happens here at the beginning is he gets the message from Crusher on his comm badge, and she sends it in a secret code that he doesn't know because he wasn't there, which is a curious choice on her part to send it in a code. Maybe she's forgotten that that happened when he wasn't there. It's unclear, but Riker knows it. But they end up being given this task, which is go find Beverly at these coordinates that she's very cleverly double-coded. Mm-hmm. Don't involve Starfleet. And the two lifelong Starfleet officers immediately say, I've got a plan. It involves Starfleet.
Oh,
and
Starfleet.
I say, guys, what are you doing? And this is my why I brought up in the context of Federation moving is, are there no other ships? Could you not just like, I mean, Picard and Riker and like, could they not like borrow or rent like a ship or charter a ship? Like they did, like Rios's ship was for rent in season one. Like, can they? And I know that Raffi's got it now, but like, could they not?
There are other ships.
Like, non Federation, big Federation starships with unpleasant captains that they have to con that they could just rent and go where Beverly is. But instead, I just thought it was funny. Now, my reaction to that is going to be these are lifelong Starfleet officers. They don't have better ideas than this. This is their big idea is why would we rent a starship when we can talk our way onto one?
That's right. Okay. We can get a starship.
I think that was a mistake. And in fact, I suspect next week, Beverly is going to have a line where she says, what do you mean you brought the Titan? I said no Starfleet. And they're going like, yeah, geez, we know, but we didn't. It's not official Starfleet. And she's like, it's a ship that's right here. What are you doing?
Full of Starfleet officers.
You dummies. And they're going to be like, well, what do you expect? We don't have random spaceships except for that one that I had the last two seasons. But other than that, we don't.
Well, this speaks to my theory of the Next Generation Picard not really being able to function outside of Starfleet. Like whenever he's not in his uniform, he makes some very interesting fashion choices because I feel like he's just like, I need to wear something.
Yeah.
These things will work. And so I think that you're right. They're just like, well, she said no Starfleet, but if we borrow a ship, it's not really Starfleet.
No. If it's against the rules of Starfleet, then it's not Starfleet, right? Like, no,
exactly.
That's not
that's
what I meant. But she's not there to tell them that. And so I do. That was my like, wait a second. They could just, is there no other way to get anywhere in space other than in Starfleet? Like, there has to be. And then number two is, oh, but maybe these guys are just dummies who are like, I don't know any other way. It's like, literally, I've never rented a car. I only know how to go in the tank that I drove in the Army. So I'm just going to get a tank and drive it around. That's what I'm going to do.
I'm going to borrow someone else's tank and have them drive me around.
Yeah. So I'm going to stow away on someone's boat and I'm going to have their boat take me where I need to go instead of renting my own boat. Yeah. I don't know.
A vague sketch of a plan. That's not even a plan, though.
No,
I'm glad Riker said it's not a plan. It's just a ruse.
It's just a ruse.
Yeah, and Picard's like, well, that's why I'm not so sure about it.
Yeah.
And it does not work well, by the way.
No.
But I did enjoy seeing Riker. I like the scene at Guinan's bar with all of the – no one wants the fat ones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Enterprise D merchandise. It's not popular.
No, not
Bummer.
Selling. Nobody
so
wants
sad.
It. Unfortunate. Mm. And then it's all to set them up to get to the Titan. And they get to the Titan. And who is there but our friend Seven of Nine – but don't call her that on the Titan because the captain is a jerk.
Yeah, so
and
it's Commander Annika Hansen, which
and
I thought if she got back in – I always thought if they got back in Starfleet, what are they going to do? Commander 9? Commander 7 of 9? I always figured she would probably have to go with Hansen. But it is – the way it's said and how unfortunate it is that he sort of forced it on her, it does feel like a very like unaccepting – improper, unfriendly, unpleasant, lack of empathy kind of move by the captain. But well, then we meet him and we realize, oh yeah, that's that guy.
And I will say that they make him super jerky, which is entertaining because he's a jerk to all our friends. And we're like, oh, you're a jerk. But he's also right. which then sets up a little tension within the viewer because you're like, oh, I don't like this guy, but he is actually making the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, it even feels like he's already decided that he's not going to, like, he's decided he's going to start eating before they get there.
Right.
He's going to put them in a bunk bed. Mm-hmm. He's going to say no to their whatever they're asking for because he doesn't want them there. They have somehow, you know, convinced them that he needs to be, they need to be there. And he's like, well, no, I'm not going to do anything you say. And like, I think he's kind of got a read on it. And he gives them guff. He says, you know, we're not going to blow anything up or crash into anything. And I thought to myself, oh, buddy, I think you're wrong. I think that they are going to blow things up and it might even be your ship. But mm-hmm. but I think, yeah, he's a real jerk, but he's not wrong. He's just a jerk.
He's just a jerk who wants to follow his orders and doesn't think that the normal chain of command involves a retired admiral and a random captain showing up and telling him to go somewhere else.
Yeah, in a classic Star Trek, I mean, Star Trek is full of those kind of characters, some of them more competent than others. Mm-hmm. But like Stiles in Star Trek III with his little riding crop, and Harriman in Star Trek Generations, and mm-hmm. Ronnie Cox in that two-part Next Generation episode.
That's a good one. Changes the duty roster.
Yeah. What is it? Delta Shift? What? yeah, exactly. So it's a classic Star Trek thing to have a jerky captain. And mm-hmm. Captain Shaw is a jerky captain. But again, they are trying to break his ship. And they do get his first officer to disobey his direct orders immediately while he's while he's sleeping. So
they don't even have to ask her; she just does it.
She just does it. Well, she hates him so much.
It's clear
that,
and I think the supporting cast does a good job of also making it clear that they do not like him when he comes onto the bridge.
There's a lot of looks on the bridge when he shows up mm-hmm. that are not "I can't believe you betrayed us, Seven," and are much more like "Oh, geez." This guy, look, I just want to get through this assignment and get on to my next thing. And mm-hmm. I mean, they all like took her orders and all that. Also, by the way, I found it very, very amusing that when he discovers that she's taken them to some other place and that a shuttlecraft has been stolen, that he basically looks at her and says, well, you better get us out of this, and leaves. I'm like, well, you could put her in the brig right now. She literally steered your ship to the wrong side of the galaxy against your orders. And instead mm-hmm. he's like, you're going to hear about that. Your career is ending when we get back. But right now I just want to go back to bed. So you're in charge again.
You're
like, okay. All right.
Yeah,
I guess.
I was expecting him to be like lock tractors on that shuttle.
Fire a phaser at it. Disable the shuttle.
Blow it up. But no, or once again, he has transporters beam them back aboard.
Well, I'm sure Riker has thought of all of that.
Oh, probably.
I do like look, this season is going to bring back the whole Next Generation crew. And the inciting incident is Crusher. But the it seems like what's really happening in terms of the trajectory of the show is Picard goes to Riker, and then Picard and Riker start everything snowballing, right? Like they're the core of it, and they start the mess that is going to lead to everybody coming back.
And all their friends have to come help them.
Yeah. So we'll get presumably more Beverly next week, and who knows who else we'll hear from, and it'll kind of like snowball from there. So it feels like in this first episode, we get them, and there's that moment where it's like, are you enjoying this? And he's like, no, not at all. Are you? Like it's just funny and fun to see those two old pals, old friends. It is very, in an episode that is full of references to classic Star Trek. Like full to bursting with references to classic Star Trek in
music,
every possible
shots,
dimension.
Yes. All kinds of things.
All props, the whole thing, everything. Mm-hmm. I think that the thing that I kept thinking is this is like classic Kirk and Spock or Kirk and McCoy in Star Trek III of the, it's our duo who are gonna break the rules because it's the right thing to do, and they're, you know, and it's delightful. I mean, there are a lot of Star Trek III vibes, right? We're gonna like break all the rules and steal a ship because we need to do it to save a friend. Mm-hmm. A lot of that going on in here. The music, as you said, it's like how many different, like it's direct use of Jerry Goldsmith's theme and also the First Contact theme. That's the next motion picture Next Generation theme and the First Contact theme. And then heavily, heavily quoting without actually using the music from Wrath of Khan as well. So, like, there's so much of all of that in there. But I think that's, you know, I don't think it's just sort of like fan service Easter egg references. Some of it is, but I think a lot of it is more like we want to infuse this with Star Trek so it feels like, you know, you know it's Star Trek. And in fact, you know it's like a Star Trek movie, right? It sort of sounds and looks like a Star Trek movie. That is what they're trying to get across here to us, is this is episode one of a TV show that's basically a Star Trek movie.
Yes. And I think I appreciate, so the thing I liked about Strange New Worlds that was so refreshing is, like, you know, I like Star Trek Discovery, but it has a very different look. And Star Trek Picard, the first two seasons had a very different, they were going for a different thing. There were hardly any, you know, Federation starships. So I got that. And I liked both of those seasons. I know they're uneven, but I like them. And I think this was the first episode of this season is just telling you, listen.
It's Star Trek.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of starships. There's going to be space time. Like, you're going to see these things. We're going to play all the music. This is a Star Trek show.
Yeah, it's going to be getting really it all. Star Trek-y this time.
Mm-hmm. Now, we could argue if they did too much. I don't think they did because I was reveling in it. Yeah. But I can understand some people thinking, like, well, do we need to slowly pan over around the USS Titan?
I loved it.
I loved it too.
Our characters are in a shuttle going to a starship. And we get the long pan as they watch the... I mean, and it wasn't that long, but it was enough to play the Jerry Goldsmith music that is simultaneously the music that plays in the long, slow pans over the Enterprise in motion picture and the Star Trek The Next Generation theme. So it is both of those things happening at once. The Titan is weird, right? Because they say it's a refit, but instead it's a new design that is trying to harken back to the original Enterprise. They said it's like
the Neo Constitution class.
And it does look more original Enterprise-y than like the Enterprise D or E. I don't know if I love it. I don't, the nacelles especially look all kind of weird, but I like that it feels very much like a Star Trek, like a classic Star Trek ship. It doesn't, you know, the Enterprise D felt, which again, we can all love it, but it was weird. It was weirdly shaped. And this one is a little more classic, you know, but I also have, they said it's like got Riker's jazz on it or something, but it looks nothing like the Titan that Riker was on that we've seen elsewhere. So I wonder if they literally wrote and shot all of that, and then they decided to change the starship design. Maybe.
Well, you know, they backed up all the files from the Titan and then just uploaded them to the new one.
They used the pieces, right? They reassembled it. Yeah. I'm sure that's it. I know that there's like extended like posts and stuff that are supposedly supplemental material where Terry Metalis, the showrunner, has done a detailed explanation of why this is the Titan, even though it doesn't look like the Titan. But whatever, it doesn't really matter. It does allow us to have that funny line where he's like, hey, Riker, I deleted all your jazz.
Because jazz sucks.
It sucks, and you suck. And do you like my classical music where there's structure and they're not blowing things up? Who is
that
guy?
Actor... is doing a great job as that jerky captain.
Amazing job.
Yes.
Amazing.
And those scenes are fantastic. And I just love the pettiness of, because I feel like it feels real, right? Like these people, and it also feels real that the crew would want to help Captain Picard and Riker, right? Because they are, one imagine, they must be Starfleet legends,
they're
right?
Legends.
And they're what you want to be when you join Starfleet.
It's like, again, I keep bringing up Star Trek III. But it's that moment in Star Trek III, which is maybe my favorite scene in that movie, where Uhura's got the trainee in the transporter, and he's like, "Why are you even here? There's nothing going on. I want adventure." And then Kirk comes in with like McCoy and Sulu, and he's like, "Oh my God, that's Captain Kirk." She's like, "Yeah, it is." And you get a little of that too, where it's like, "Whoa, Picard is here," and like, "Oh well." Both of these guys are better captains than our guy.
And they probably are going to do something exciting. So let's do it.
That's why we're here. we get to be in Star Trek now. A little bit. It feels like that's happening a little bit. Also, we should mention Geordi's daughter, old Crash LaForge, is there. A little mean to call out her thing she's trying to obviously trying to live down and not deal with of crashing shuttles. But
I kind of like that though, because it feels like the thing that your friend's dad, your that's dad's right. friend, would totally do. Yep. Like, oh.
Yeah, he's like hazing her. Basically, he's like, ah, good stuff, good stuff. And she's like, it's not funny. I'm not having a good, but still, a funny, funny little touch. That was nice.
Yes. And she played by LeVar Burton's daughter?
No, LeVar Burton's daughter is the other daughter who will also be in this season. But that
I only knew she was playing a daughter.
Yeah, this is a different actress who's playing this. Who's playing old Crash LaForge here?
Oh, Crash LaForge.
I mentioned the darkness. I have to say it. I do think that it's underlit. I think that the bridge of the ship, like, I like the mm-hmm. cinematic nature of it, but and you don't want to overlight it. Like, Next Generation was so everything was so well lit, but it feels like it's a little too dark to me, especially since they're like in space dock. Like, I almost can understand it more when they're like go to battle stations and the red lights come out and all of that, but like mm-hmm. it just seemed really shadowy and dark for like a workplace. Just that's all I'm saying.
Maybe Captain Shaw likes it that way.
I guess so.
Each captain gets to set the environmental controls. And so
I guess so. It's a little dark.
He's from the Mirror Universe, so his eyes are very sensitive.
Wow. So he's not a jerk in the Mirror Universe, is what you're telling me.
He's very nice in the Mirror Universe. And probably dead.
Yeah, that's true. But he's swapped.
Nice people don't survive.
It explains his behavior that he's from the Mirror Universe because he's such a jerk. But the original was probably not. I guess that's what I'm trying to say there.
Yeah, I think that's true. Because who would be a jerk to Captain Picard?
I know.
Other than Ben Sisko, but he had a good reason. So.
He did.
Yeah.
What else? Rafi?
She's doing things. She's working for, I forget where we left Rafi at the season two, but I guess she's broken up with Seven of Nine. She's not in Starfleet anymore.
Or is she? Because she's lying. She's acting.
Deep cover
as herself, which I think is a great use of her as a Starfleet intelligence officer. She actually has the thing where she picks up like the drug thing, but turns as if she's going to use it, but doesn't use it. And because she's a recovering addict, then even later when she's got it in her hand, she has to work really hard to drop it.
I like that scene a lot.
But it allows her to be the person on the outs who's just trying to find a way to you know make some money, but she's actually working for Starfleet intelligence. And she's got the La Serena, and she's got a secret handler who we don't see, which means it's somebody we know because that's why they don't show them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they communicate via text message, I guess.
Yeah, secret
that encrypted. Siri reads, I guess.
But she solves the mystery of what the Red Lady is, I guess, which is the Rachel Garrett Memorial Statue.
The big red Rachel Garrett Memorial Statue.
Yep, apparently.
Made of redstone. From her home state of Montana. I don't know. I'm making that up. But,
and she goes, and there's a terrorist attack. So this is our other plot thread, right? Is that a big Starfleet facility gets sort of like sucked into the ground and then deposited back in the sky to fall down and destroy part of the city, which is a pretty dramatic little moment.
It was very dramatic. I was not expecting it. So I'd seen the building collapsing in the trailer, so I assumed that that was all there was to it, which is also dramatic enough.
Yeah.
But adding the extra, now drop it from the sky on another part of the city, added a bit of drama that I was not expecting. And I guess Rafi tries to call them and say, hey, I mean, there's nothing she could do at that point anyway. It seems like it was a little too late, but and nobody answers. So I assume they were blocking her signal or something. And we'll find out more, one assumes.
One assumes.
No, there you go. One assumes. Who knows? And then she – I also assume that these two threads are going to meet and join. And we'll find out that the mysterious people that are chasing Beverly Crusher for whatever reason also stole this weapon from the Daystrom Institute or the Daystrom Station, whatever that was. For nefarious purposes, well, obviously nefarious purposes, they already have
they
some
already
nefarious purposes. And who knows what they are? I have a guess, but I don't know. Because there's also, they show this dude who was watching Riker and Picard at 10 forward.
Yes.
And Guinan's 10 forward. And then I think it's the same guy who shows up on the Titan. Is that right?
Because I didn't go back and look, but I thought that would not surprise me if it was literally the same guy in both places. But I didn't get a chance to go back and check that.
I do not know. I have a gut feeling it is, because there's no other reason to show us that random guy who was standing in the hallway after the little
looking,
cadets blew the whistle.
Suspicious, right?
A little shifty, yes. So we'll see what that's all about. And that's the episode, I think. I mean, I think this answered my big question was, are they just going to have everybody? In the first episode, is like by the end, are they all going to be together? And then, you know, gallivant throughout the rest of the season, which I didn't think was going to happen, but I thought it was a possibility. And the answer is no. They're going to, one assumes, spread out throughout the whole season. He will be collecting people. I don't know. We'll find out if they all, like, if they're just going to drop in for a couple episodes, or are they all going to come together? I don't know.
I think based on the trailers, they are going to come together at some point, but I don't know the details.
It would seem like a waste of effort if they didn't all come together.
Right.
And people would be very upset.
Exactly. So there's more there. Let's see. What else?
Any other is things there? I mean, tickled your fancy?
Very dramatic.
The ending.
End,
yeah.
Where they get mm-hmm. to the Beverly ship, and she is on ice. But we meet her son.
Son number two.
There's that whole logic thing of like, well, you know, she didn't go in herself. So you must have put her in there. Like, it's like, so I know that they're, you know, right. Like it's mm-hmm. not that hard to put this together, kid. So we're not going to say who the father is, but she hasn't seen Jean-Luc for, you know, 20 years.
Yeah, and he looks 20 right. or so.
For reasons, she hasn't seen anybody on the crew.
Yes.
And for reasons, and we don't know what those reasons are. So that is kind of fascinating. And then the ship, their attacking ship shows up again. So
very big, very dramatic.
And I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, but the Titan's right out there, so maybe this will be a different kind of thing, but it's a very dramatic
we'll
moment
see.
For Picard.
Right? But they're in that gaseous anomaly. So
they are.
Does the Titan even know that's there?
Who knows?
So yeah, next week, at the end of this episode, Marisa, my lovely wife, turned to me and said, well, that's not a satisfying ending, which is true because it is a cliffhanger. It sets up a whole bunch of stuff, and it's gotten our people to the plot to the point where I think the motivations will be revealed and we'll go from there.
I think so.
One assumes.
I think so. I have some I have some obvious and some non-obvious conspiracy thoughts.
All right, well, we have to fire off the conspiracy phaser.
Yep.
So if you don't want to hear some wild theories, just stop listening now.
Okay, so first off, this is what I was going to say last week, which is that he's Jean-Luc's kid.
Yes, and we're going to find that out next episode.
The next generation, if you will.
Ah, yes, the next generation.
So Beverly saying that they have different faces.
Mm-hmm. Makes me think they could be founders.
And saying, trust no one in Starfleet. It could be founders or something
changelings.
DS9 related. And the other mm-hmm. thought I had is the conspiracy worms.
Oh, well, that's a compelling thing, too. Because
completely
that's,
untouched, right, since that one mm-hmm. episode of The Next Generation. But it's just sitting out there that the conspiracy worms could be back. They could have received the message. It's taken them a while to get wherever they
it was being beamed off into deep, deep space,
yeah,
as
right?
we recall.
So I don't know if I really want to say that it's going to be the conspiracy worms, but I do wonder. I do think it's going to be based on what Terry Metalis, the producer, has said. I think whatever the stuff that they have not revealed in the trailers has a past Trek connection,
and
they seem to imply that it's something that will blow people's minds, which means to me that it will be something obscure and not expected that will be brought back, which is why I immediately thought of the conspiracy worms, because that was a setup, obviously, for a future villain and storyline that was never, ever, ever addressed. But they've also said that they want to address some DS9 things. So,
I don't know.
The Dominion and the Founders and all of that could be a part of it, too. I don't know. It's a...
Yeah, I and if you are listening and you think, what the heck is a conspiracy worm? because we have heard, you know, Jason, you and I once in a while say, hey,
hey, we
who's watching this show? Right. If you don't know these references, not in like a gatekeeping way, but it's just like, we don't know.
I have no old episodes to reference specifically for this episode, right? It feels like, I mean, if you haven't seen Star Trek III, that's
watch Star Trek 2, then Star Trek 3, and Star Trek 4. That is the only way to watch Star Trek 3 between 2 and 4.
I agree. But it's got some fun stuff in it that I think that they are referencing here. And there's that, what, Connected, is it the name of the episode? The episode where Picard and Beverly have the, they're like mentally attached. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's called Attached, actually.
And
that one is... one of the key Picard Beverly episodes in terms of their relationship that's never really the line is great, right? It's like, you know, we tried is the operative word there, but like in the show they didn't really even try, so obviously they tried afterward. But Attached to season 7, episode 8, but the conspiracy worms are in season 1. It's the next to last episode of season 1.
There's
worms that infiltrate the Federation. It's a very weird episode. A guy's head gets blown off. It's the most graphic episode. Riker eats worms at one point to fit in
gross.
Peer pressure. He pretends to almost eat worms, and then he doesn't eat worms.
And then that kind of establishes that Starfleet Admiral, I mean, the original series did this, but it continues that the trend of Starfleet Admirals are not to be trusted.
Yeah, exactly.
And also have weird... uniforms.
And it's both of those things are true. So anyway, I'll throw in the conspiracy worms there, but then to your point, Deep Space Nine had a whole war with the Dominion that was run by these creatures called the Founders that were changelings, and they were shape-shifting aliens that could appear as anybody. And I just think it's obviously some sort of a code that it's like they look, their faces keep changing or whatever, that something weird is going on there. And the fact that we have the guy at the bar and the guy who is in the little piping them aboard from their shuttlecraft thing, where there's that look and he's just like, suspicious look, that something is, you know, this is why she said no Starfleet, right? Is that they're already being watched.
And I hope that you're right, because I like Founders. The Founders are fascinating and great villains in Deep Space Nine. So if you haven't watched Deep Space Nine, here's my recommendation.
Watch the whole thing.
Watch all of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
You could skip the first season, I suppose.
Move along home.
Greatest, but Telemarine. But you could see the first episode of Deep Space Nine. Jean-Luc Picard makes a cameo appearance.
He does.
But they're great, great villains. But I the idea of the conspiracy worms being an integral part of Star Trek Picard makes me so pleased that I hope it is true.
Right? I mean, it's out of the blue, right? Like, what? You did what? You brought the conspiracy worms back?
Because that is really, I think we talked about this. We've talked about this multiple times. Like, that's one of the biggest unresolved things that they set up.
35 years ago, they just laid it there and it's like, and that was it. They never, because at the end of season 1, they were trying to set up some potential villain plots for season 2. So the end of that episode has the conspiracy worms, and the next episode has the Romulans come back and they're like, hey, somebody's been scooping our colonies out of planets. What's that about? Mm-hmm. And they used that bit to do the Borg. That led into the Borg the next season. But the conspiracy worms, whoever came in to write season 2, they're like, we're not going to do that.
They look kind of dumb. So that was,
sure.
I think that if you have your choice as a writer to deal with a collective hive mind of cybernetic beings or claymation worms as your...
It's like
villains, I think.
Like the thing, right? They're like possessor or the invasion of the body snatchers is kind of what they are.
No, it's a creepy idea.
A little more horror, though, than maybe Star Trek wanted to do. And the Borg is, I mean, the Borg, right, is great. So they made the right decision to invent the Borg and to do that instead of the conspiracy worms. I'm just saying the conspiracy worms are right. They're right out there.
Still on the board. Conspiracy
worms. That's right. Conspiracy worms available at a low, low price on FBay, Federation eBay.
Well, and next week we have another exciting episode to look forward to. I briefly looked at the name, but now I don't even remember the name of the next episode.
It's like Disengage or something.
Oh, Disengaging or something like that. Yeah. Yes. Which is silly. But next week, Jason, you will be on assignment on Ryza, one assumes.
That's right. I'm going to Rigel 6. I mean 7.
Oh, no.
Did you notice, by the way, that the Terry Metalis is the showrunner, and where Rafi is Metalis Prime?
I did notice that.
Metalis Prime. But it's not him. That's a reference from Enterprise, where one of the producers named a planet after their young production assistant, Terry Metalis.
Terry Metalis.
So he brought it back, and he's like, I am canonically named the worst planet where all the scum and villainy is named for me, and so he brought it back.
Yeah, it's not a nice planet.
But I will be on, one of the Rigels or some other pleasure moon somewhere for a couple of weeks. So you're gonna find some guests to help you do the Vulcan Hello without me, and I'll watch them when I get back, or on a VPN, or I don't know what. We'll see. But I'll watch them. I'll be ready to go in 3 weeks for whatever comes in episode 4.
Jason, trust no one. No Starfleet.
No Starfleet. Okay, well, I got this Starfleet ship I'm going to take. Is that okay? Does that count as no Starfleet?